Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's edition of Jump Right In, a production of 1111 Broadcasting. This is Splash, and my pond is open. Thursday, I marveled at Obama's ability to inspire us as a people after I went a little off on him the night before for his purchase of the union address and his quest to further divide our government, our people, our nation. Two completely polar opposite speeches. One, the typical politician. The other, completely inspirational. Tonight, we'll focus on the middle of his speech, which was all about justifying his foreign policy approach. A really tough area for Obama to convince the American people that he isn't out of his league. We will also talk about the new Elmo Senate and how the Smurfs are just beside themselves, that the Elmos are conducting themselves like Smurfs. We will jump on Queen Pelosi as the Smurfs plan to, wait for it, repackage their message. That's right. There's not a problem with your hearing. It's not their message, but the packaging. Where have we heard that before? And that will lead us to the reason the Smurfs need to repackage, and it isn't the Elmos that they need. It's not because of the Elmos that they need to repackage. It's because of their fellow Smurf, Liz Warren. I love this woman. I still believe she's the only hope that the Smurfs have to win the White House in 2016. But I am starting to see some chinks in her armor as the people's advocate, and I want to talk about it because ultimately, it seems to happen to all of them. Not one of them is immune. They go to Washington with great dreams of turning old-style politics around, only to realize that they get even a smidgen of what they want done. They have to give up so, so much. This is why they all have to go. As soon as they get in, they all have to go. We've got a great show for you tonight. So much to cover. I just don't see how we're going to get it all in. I just don't. The number to call, 215-383-5730. And I encourage you to jump right in. Wade carefully if you must. But remember, in my pond, everyone swims at their own risk. We'll be here for the next hour doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics. And tonight our focus is on, once again, the president's speech. It's just something you can't cover in 1 hour. It seems like every time he uttered a sentence, I had something that I wanted to say about that, good or bad. So tell me, of course, I want to know what you think. We now have a blog, so all of our shows are posted there, both past, present, and future. Go to 1111broadcasting.com, and you can listen to a show, make comments and suggestions, or just say hi. You can also follow me on Facebook at 1111broadcasting. The Facebook page is new to me, so I don't know all the ins and outs, of course, but I do know that you can listen to the show right there on Facebook, on your Facebook page. And if you get the link, you just click the little play arrow right on the picture of the belly flopper. You'll know what I mean when you look. And just listen right there on Facebook. That's 1111 Broadcasting. That's the Facebook page for the show. If you miss a show, don't sweat it. Shows are linked on my blog and the Facebook page. So just go to 1111broadcasting.com. That's the blog. Or 1111broadcasting. That's the Facebook page. You can jump right into the show chat room here tonight. You'll need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. Put in your email address. Pick a screen name and password, and voila, you can jump right into the chat room, pick on people, or even pick on me. I can take it. Now, of course, you don't need to create an account to call. Just dial the number right there at the top of the show page, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. And I would love to talk to you. Put me to the test. It'll be your time to shine. Now, before we get into the show and more of the president's speech, let me just tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my whole family to Choice Mattress, and everything was considered, from the weight of each family member to their age to the way each of us sleeps. The right mattress was personally selected for each of us. Now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. Chances are that if you bought a bed in Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years, then you bought it from David. With over 20 years experience, David knows beds, and you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go to Choice Mattress and Furniture, located at the corner of LPGA and Nova Road. That's 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you have any questions, just give them a call. The phone number is 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your speech. Now, we're going to talk about Obama's speech we're going to talk about it first because I don't want to run out of time. I'm going to spend about 10, maybe 15 minutes on this, and then we're going to move on. But the number to call if you want to chat about the speech, 215-383-5730. It's 215-383-5730. And Obama's speech is basically cut into thirds. The first part was him hacking away and pointing fingers and dividing the country over this issue and that issue and the other issue. Middle third was his approach to the rest of the world. And the final third, of course, was the inspirational part of his speech that really moved me, that I talked about on Thursday night. Well, tonight we're focused on the middle part of his speech, where he talked about his approach to world diplomacy. And he said, "Of course, if there's one thing this new century has taught us, it's that we cannot separate our work at home from the challenges beyond our shores." Okay, isolation's over. All the aspects of the world are global. Thank you, Captain Obvious. How many times have the Smurfs said, "It's none of our business. Let them fight it out. Let them kill each other." But anyway, he goes on to say, "My first duty as Commander-in-Chief is to defend the United States of America. In doing so, the question is not whether America leads the world, but how. When we make rash decisions, reacting to the headlines instead of using our heads, when the first response to challenge is to send in our military, then we risk getting drawn into unnecessary conflicts and neglect the broader strategy we need for a safer, more prosperous world. That's what our enemies want us to do." Now, by the way, when has military ever been our first response? Can anybody tell me that? Anyone? Anyone? It hasn't. But he says, "I believe in a smarter kind of American leadership. We lead best when we combine our military power with strong diplomacy." Or, shall we say, Russia's diplomatic diversion with imaginary red lines. Now, when we leverage our power with coalition building, that's what Obama says he's focused on. Does everyone realize that Obama's coalition is smaller than the one W built for Iraq? Does everyone know that? Does anyone know that? Obama says, "When we don't let our fears blind us to the opportunities that this new century presents." You are getting very sleepy. Very, very sleepy. Terrorism isn't real. It's not caused by Islam. Iran doesn't sponsor terrorism. ISIS is a JV team of Al-Qaeda wannabes. You can wake up now. That's exactly, Obama says, what we're doing right now all around the globe. It is making and all around the globe, it is making a difference. Folks, America is getting more trampled than ever before, ignored more than ever before, laughed at more than ever before. Obama says, "First, we stand united with the people around the world who've been targeted by terrorists, from the schools in Pakistan to the streets of Paris. We will continue to hunt down terrorists and dismantle their networks, and we reserve the right to act unilaterally, as we've done recently since I took office to take out terrorists who pose a direct threat to us and our allies. Yay! Sounds great, right? Except the dissed Paris that he dissed Paris while running to meet the new king of Saudi Arabia. At this same time, Obama says, we've learned some costly lessons over the last 13 years. Uh-oh. You mean like don't leave Iraq or Afghanistan too early? Leave a residual force to bolster the fledgling new national forces that you took the time to train? Those lessons that we're talking about? I don't know. Let's find out. Let's hear some more of what he had to say. Instead of America patrolling the valleys of Afghanistan, we trained their security forces who now have taken the lead, and we've honored our troops' sacrifice by supporting that country's first democratic transition. Not working, folks. Instead of sending large ground forces overseas, we're partnering with nations from South Asia and North Africa to defy safe havens to terrorists who threaten America. Not working, folks. In Iraq and Syria, American leadership, including our military power, is stopping ISIL's advance. A, not working, folks. And B, even if it were stopping their advance, big deal. Are we actually going to let them keep what they stole? Are we going to actually let them control those 18 oil fields? Are we going to actually let the people that live in those territories be their people? Are we doing that? Is that what we're going to do? Obama goes on, instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, including Arab nations, to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group. By the way, the word ultimately there, he's added that. It used to be degrade and destroy. Before that, it was destroy. As it goes on and on and on, that our airstrikes are not really helping all that much. And ISIS continues to grow and recruit and become more powerful. We keep adding words to the description of our approach. You know, it really amazes me that they said W was a go-it-alone president when his coalition was bigger, with people actually supplying troops and not cheerleading squads. We are also supporting a moderate opposition in Syria that can help us in this effort and assist people everywhere who stand up to the bankrupt ideologies of violent extremism. Really? When? Where? By what measure? The moderates in Syria have made a pact with ISIS in Syria that they're going to go after Assad first, not attack each other until they finish tackling Assad. I'm sorry, folks. They're getting free training, free equipment, free everything from us. 5,000 of them. We're going to send them back there to side with ISIL to go against Assad. Maybe one day they'll decide, okay, Assad's dead, and then suddenly realize they're standing next to each other and turn and attack each other. And then again, maybe not. This effort will take time, Obama says. It will require focus, but we will succeed. And tonight I call on Congress to show the world that we are united in this mission by passing a resolution to authorize the use of force against ISIL. We're using force against ISIL, folks. That's number one. Number two, it will require focus. It will take time. It will take starting the effort in the first place. The Congress gave Obama the authorization to train moderates in Saudi Arabia. How's that going? Don't blame Congress because nothing's happening. You said you needed further authorization. You said you didn't need further authorization, that the original authorization for the Iraq war was all you needed. So stop belly aching and do your job. Second, Obama says, we're demonstrating the power of America, America's strength, and diplomacy. We're upholding the principle that bigger nations can't bully smaller nations by opposing Russian aggression, supporting Ukraine's democracy, and reassuring our NATO allies. Last year, as we were doing the hard work of imposing sanctions along with our allies, some suggested that Mr. Putin's aggression was a masterful display of strategy and strength. Well, today, it is America that stands strong and united with our allies while Russia is isolated with its economy in tatters. If he thinks that he did this, he is out of his mind, folks. thanks to fracking, thanks to the oil industry, thanks to the luck of time, and even thanks to OPEC for deciding not to cut their production. Folks, Russia needs oil to be about $100 a barrel, $105, $95, give or take. That's what they need to balance their budget. It stands today at about $50 per barrel, and it hasn't, and it's been there for a while. It hasn't been under the necessary threshold. It has been under the necessary threshold for Russia to balance its books for a while. Without this assist from the U.S. oil industry and OPEC, the sanctions placed on Russia would be no more than a gnat on an elephant's ass. Russia's isolated, tattered economy has nothing to do with Obama opposing Russian aggression, not the way he opposed it. It has nothing to do with standing up for Ukraine's democracy or reassuring our NATO allies. The oil industry and that Obama and his fellow Smurfs love to hate are completely responsible for Russia's decline and their plummeting into a recession. And even that won't stop Putin. Obama says that that's how America leads, not with bluster, but with persistent, steady resolves. Not with bluster? That is exactly what it is. Bluster, foolhardiness, pussification, and in the case of Russia, a whole lot of luck. But with persistent and steady resolve. Yeah. The steady resolve to pull out and do nothing and rely on chance. Obama said that his foreign policy was don't do stupid stuff. I wish he wouldn't do stupid stuff. We would be better off if he stopped after his first word, don't. But he didn't. And he has been doing stupid stuff ever since. Stupid stuff like calling ISIS a JV team. Stupid stuff like snubbing France. Stupid stuff like leaking a planned Israeli strike on Iranian nuclear facilities. Stupid stuff like drawing a red line in Syria in the Syrian sands. Stupid stuff like not having the kahunas to follow through when Assad called his bluff. Stupid stuff like trading 5 terror detainees for 1 deserter. Even kids playing Red Rover, Red Rover would call that stupid. Stupid stuff like not fighting for a sofa from Iraq so we could keep the necessary residual forces there so it didn't fall apart. Stupid stuff like sending ground troops back to Iraq and renaming them advisors as though we won't know that those are boots on the ground. Stupid stuff like removing the planned missile defense systems from Eastern Europe that is way back at the beginning of his presidency. Doing stupid stuff started way back when because, I'm sorry folks, Obama is out of his league in world diplomacy. This is all stupid stuff. Stupid, stupid stuff. And this part of his purchase of the union address was to convince us that it wasn't stupid, that if we just talk to the people, if we pull the ground troops off the table, if we lead from behind, if we rely on bombing sorties alone, that it is somehow a smarter kind of American leadership. But it is not Obama's fault completely. Ever since the end of World War II, America has lost her ability to wage war, letting politicians and even the media wage those wars for us instead of our generals and combat experts on the ground. Hitler lost World War II after having been in the driver's seat by insisting that he was a better general than Rommel. Did he learn from this? Nope. Every president from Truman in Korea to Kennedy in Cuba to LBJ and Nixon in Vietnam to Bush and Obama in Iraq and Afghanistan and now Obama in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Yemen, etc. This pussification of America was perpetrated by Reagan and the use of the surgical strike, where suddenly it was a crime only if Western countries caused collateral damage that was always been a byproduct of war, always. Now all of the terrorist has to do is throw a little Nike sneaker that he ordered online from Amazon.com into a pile of rubble and call on the nearest woman to hold it up and wail into the CNN cameras. But does Obama stop there? Hell no, he doesn't stop there. He keeps saying stupid stuff. In Cuba, we're ending a policy that has long passed its expiration date. When what you're doing doesn't work for 50 years, it's time to try something new. Okay, the embargo was to isolate Cuba. That was the whole point. Yeah. When the current leadership is old and at its weakest, change the policy and credit the change and take credit for the change. Because the embargo, there is no replacement waiting in the wing to fill Castro's shoes, not because of Obama's unilateral 180, but because of the embargo over the last 50 years. Our shift in the Cuban policy has the potential to end a legacy of mistrust in our hemisphere, Obama says, removes a phony excuse for restrictions in Cuba, stands up for the democratic values, and extends the hand of friendship to the Cuban people. No, it doesn't. It extends the hand of friendship to the Castros. Nothing except the death of the Castros and the rising of the Cuban people will do this. America let them down during the Bay of Pigs and left the Cubans to the brutal will of the Castro regime. Do we really think lifting the embargo so Raul can feel some flexibility and elbow room, some financial release, some democratic victory? Do we really think that'll make the Cubans forget? It won't. It can't. Absolutely nothing except that will do that. It's just the whole speech started to amaze me after a while. Did Gruber mention that the Cuban people were stupid as our own? Because if he did, I missed it. And this year, Congress should begin to work ending the embargo. No, they shouldn't. They should announce that when Raul is ousted from power and replaced with a democratically elected successor, then and only then will we lift the embargo. I sure hope that's what Congress does. This 180 was out of the blue. It was so unexpected because nobody was even thinking about Cuba. It was almost as if Obama stayed up all night one night wondering, what can I do? What can I possibly do that would make almost everyone do a double take? Say, what? Then he invokes the Pope. And His Holiness, Pope Francis, he said diplomacy is the work of small steps. These small steps have added up to new hope for the new future in Cuba. This was not a small step. This was not a small step. Cuba didn't even have to do anything. Raul said he got everything he wanted and didn't have to give up anything at all. One American, Alan Gross, and while I am happy Alan Gross was released, there goes Obama demonstrating that he is absolutely the worst negotiator of all times. The worst negotiator of all. This is why we do not want to give this man unilateral power to make our trade deals. This is the reason right here. He is demonstrating how he is the worst negotiator of all times. Kids would just love to play Monopoly with Obama. He would give away Boardwalk and Park Place with hotels for something like Waterworks or Baltic Avenue or just a get-out-of-jail-free card. Obama says our diplomacy is at work with respect to Iran, where for the first time in a decade, we've halted the progress of its nuclear program and reduced its stockpile of nuclear material. Yeah, this man is just positively delusional, folks. Between now and the spring, we have a chance to negotiate a comprehensive agreement that prevents a nuclear-armed Iran, secures America and our allies, including Israel, while avoiding yet another Middle East conflict. That is already a year and a half late. The comprehensive deal was supposed to happen within 6 months of our sanctions being lifted, or those sanctions were supposed to be reinstated and layered even with harsher sanctions. And Obama begged Congress not to lay out what those harsher sanctions were. And look at that. Iran missed it. Deadline after deadline. Now here we are a year and a half, 2 years later with nothing. He already knows he's being duped. Obama already knows this. He says there are no guarantees that negotiations will succeed, and I keep all options on the table to prevent a nuclear Iran. He already knows he's being duped. But new sanctions, he says, passed by this Congress at this moment in time will all but guarantee that diplomacy will fail, alienating America from its allies and ensuring that Iran starts up its nuclear program again. It doesn't make sense. That is baloney. That is so bogus, it's not even funny. Telling Iran what will happen if they don't agree to a comprehensive deal will either motivate them or expose them exposed that they were never serious in the first place. This is Obama's weakness shining through, coupled with the slim hope that he will end up somehow with a major diplomatic accomplishment before he leaves office, and that accomplishment that has eluded him for 6 years so far. He says that is why I will veto any new sanctioned bill that threatens to undo this progress. And there it is, folks. Obama only has the ability to be tough with the Elmos in Congress and his fellow Smurfs, who genuinely do believe, a lot of them believe, that if you don't do a sanctions package, that sanction package is vital leverage to good faith negotiations from Iran. Obama says that the American people expect us to only go to war as a last resort, and I intend to stay true to that wisdom. Who's saying anything about war here? Clinton struck an aspirin factory claiming it was a nuclear facility. Was that war in Iraq? It wasn't. A strike on Iran's nuclear facilities is not war unless Iran declares war. If the negotiations fail because we outline to Iran what will happen sanction-wise if they fail to strike a deal, then negotiations just never had a chance in the first place. Then Obama goes on to talk about cyber wars and hacking and Ebola and disease prevention, trade balance and climate change, human equality and Gitmo, and civil rights, torture and privacy, none of which I have the time for tonight because I want to move on to Congress. And so maybe we'll cover the rest of his speech some other time. Maybe we won't. We'll just have to see what future shows hold. But I'm already over on time to talk about that. If you want to talk about the Obama speech, give me a call, 215-383-5730, 215-383-5730. But I do want to talk about an article I read. You can pick any article, but this one was conducive to what I want to talk about here. Senate's marathon Keystone debate that ended in anger. Part of this is from an article that I read in Politico that started out, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell moved to end debate around midnight, this was last week, after a seemingly endless series of votes and quorums that left Democrats fuming. Wow, what a difference one election makes, right? Mind you, when Prince Harry and the Smurfs ran the Senate, there was no debate to even bitch about ending. Then the article says the new freewheeling Senate of Majority Leader Mitch McConnell presided over an agitated debate. See, at least there was debate. Agitated debate, but debate nonetheless. The debate was on the Keystone Pipeline that churned into Friday's wee hours. Man, they debated even into the wee hours? Wow. And, of course, it ended with aggrieved Democrats crying, Coke, which I love. I mean, anytime they run out of anything to say, Coke, brothers, Coke, brothers, Coke, brothers. Now, that's what the Smurfs always say when they don't get their way, right? I mean, left is some, it's some kind of nervous tic. I'm not getting my Coke way. It's almost like a Tourette condition, a knee-jerk Coke reaction with a little twitch in their eye and Coke neck. It's really quite peculiar to watch. So around midnight, a seemingly endless series of amendment votes and quorum calls shifted as McConnell moved to end the debate on a bill that would yank President Obama's authority over the proposed pipeline after quickly deposing of five Democrat amendments. Debate and amendments. Oh my gosh. Just what exactly are the Smurfs griping about here? That they didn't get to debate? No. That they were indeed debating? They were indeed debating. That they didn't get to offer up amendments? No. The article says after a seemingly endless series of amendment votes and quorums. So what are the Smurfs bitching about here exactly? That they aren't getting their way. That's it. So let's recap. For 6 years, the Elmos did not get their way. The Elmos rarely, if ever, got to debate and rarely, if ever, got to offer amendments. The Smurfs are getting to to do both of those things now. They are just not getting their way, so they become a little pinky toe that goes wee, 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 or should I say coke, 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 all the way home. Well, how does that feel? Bitter is the medicine that is your own. But I love this next line, I really do. Blindsided Democrats accuse the Kentucky Republican of shutting down a Senate that he promised to run in a more open way than their own leaders did. Oh my gosh. First of all, blindsided? How can they be blindsided by any of this after 6 years of them being this being their MO in the majority? They should not be surprised at all. But I thank them for the confession that their leaders ran a rather one-sided Senate. If they want to gripe about how they are being treated now, they should gripe at Harry Reid. But why point fingers at your own guilty leaders when you can point fingers at your opposition and divide the American public? But true to my word, that they are all the same. This is exactly what I say all the time, folks. The Elmos do the same thing. Didn't they threaten the nuclear option when minority Smurfs were blocking GWB's appointments, including Jeb Ships? And then they bemoaned Harry, Prince Harry, when he actually did it. Now that they are feeling their oats, and Justice Ginsburg has said she won't step down anytime soon, now they want to drop the nuclear bomb on SCOTUS appointments as well, hoping that they will have the president that nominates the next justice to the United States Supreme Court. Now, they also wonder aloud if the Democrats wanted to know if Republicans were trying to wrap up the Keystone business to accommodate a conference scheduled for this weekend in Palm Springs that's affiliated to the billionaire conservative Charles and David Koch. Now, one reason to rush out of Congress, folks, is just as poor as another one. Christmas, campaign season, my mother's uncle's granddaughter's friend's third cousin's dog's owner's niece's Cabbage Patch doll's birthday, or even a Koch brother event. Big deal. The article goes on to say that McConnell's spokesperson Don Stewart countered that the GOP had offered to hold a series of Keystone votes on Friday, but that the Senate Democrats, Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois, objected. Throughout the frantic nighttime series of votes to table Democrat amendments, the minority party slammed McConnell for obstructing their proposals by blocking a straight up or down decision. Doesn't that sound familiar? McConnell has just slammed the door on open process, said Jeff Merkel, the Democrat from Oregon. He tweeted that, actually. What a bunch of whiners. Did they really think that they were going to go along business as usual after the electorate got fed up with Prince Harry filing House-passed bills in File 13 all the time? Surely not. Meanwhile, the GOP hailed a Senate that has already voted on more amendments in less than 1 month of 2015 than it had in all of 2014. Wow, look at that. They're breaking another record, just like the filibuster record. Now they're getting more amendments voted on than any other Congress. Go figure. Does that make up for their record filibuster with the Smurfs? I'm going to go with a big fat no on that one. Beyond the Koch-tinged recriminations is a bipartisan spat. Spat. I love that word, spat. A spat that could set the tone for the rest of McConnell's first year at the helm of the Senate. The new majority leader's vow to hold open debate on Keystone has at times put his own members in politically perilous situations, such as Wednesday's vote on accepting humans' role in climate change that fell just one senator short. Yet Republicans have offered nothing but praise so far for the change. Will that make up for the record filibustering? Another not? Okay. Oh, well. After years of dysfunction, it's good to see us finally getting to work, having open debate and allowing senators from both sides the chance to offer ideas and reshape policy, said Pat Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania. He tweeted that on Thursday. Folks, this is just a total burn. Even when their fellow Elmos objected and caused friction. The new Elmo Congress is allowing debate that Prince Harry didn't allow, and minority amendments offered that Prince Harry didn't allow. Democrats continued to cry foul, however, late into the night on Thursday. One Senate Democrat aide lamented that it's just a little ridiculous now that after talking for years about needing time to read legislative language, McConnell would move through amendments that Democrats asked for more time to consider. Oh my gosh. Why are you so surprised? Why? Obviously, you think this is how it should be done anyway. Remember? But the Elmos won, right? Okay. The Senate is set to finish work on six remaining amendments to the Keystone Bill starting on Monday, with a final passage vote on the legislation before the end of next week. It's all but certain to draw a veto from Obama, of course. Everybody knows that. And this is just proof that the Koch convention had nothing to do with it. They aren't even done with Keystone Bill yet. So, boneheads. Whiners, the one and all of them. And so what this basically does is it leaves Pelosi in a real bind here because Pelosi has a big problem in her ranks right now. California lawmaker, House Democrats, members are complaining that the party has no message, no clear plan to retake the majority, despite good news on the economy that should have brought rewards at the polls. Pelosi remains the preeminent force in her caucus, of course, and nobody is stepping up to challenge her. But the heightened criticism comes at a time when she has few cards to play to win members' loyalty. Actually, folks, she doesn't have much at all, almost nothing. Thanks to big losses in November that shrank the number of Democratic seats on highly sought-after committees, the discontent will be at the forefront of the House Democratic Caucus 3-day retreat this week in Philadelphia. The focus is the Smurfs' seeming inability to craft an economic message that appeals to voters. This is from Connecticut Rep. Jim Hines. What crystallizes the frustration and concern you see in the Democratic caucus is the disconnect between the economic numbers and the economic numbers we've suffered and the electoral numbers that we've suffered in the last 6 years or so. So he sees a disconnect between the good economic movement and the electoral numbers that they've suffered in the last 6 years or so. So that provokes a lot of soul searching. Do people know? Gruber alert, Gruber alert, are the people really stupid? Do the people know? Do the people not know what is happening in the economy? Yes, we do. Do the people not believe us that we had something to do with this recovery? No, we don't. Virginia Rep. Jerry Connolly said that the Democrats are hungry for answers. I think there's a growing desire within the Democratic caucus, at least from Democrats that I talk to try to get a fundamental understanding of what went wrong. Not only in this midterm, but the previous midterm. If we're going to grow and we're going to avoid becoming a permanent minority here in the House, we have to have answers. Remember when the Elmos lost the 2012 presidential election? They didn't even give up a whole lot of room in the Senate and in the House. They conducted their so-called autopsy, deciding to repackage their message instead of changing their message. The Smurfs said it wasn't the packaging, it was the message. Remember? It sure doesn't seem like the Smurfs remember. They have a message. It is just that the electorate doesn't like their message. Another Democrat speaking on background questioned the brand of economic populism from the party that the party has been preaching. We're talking now, that's a total target on Elizabeth Warren. For me, my evangelical mission is to try to persuade Democrats that we have to pay more attention to the suburbs, the Democrats said. And the economic message for the suburb has to be broader than unemployment insurance and minimum wage. You know how the Democrats always make that part of a jobs bill, unemployment insurance and minimum wage, part of a jobs bill. Nothing, they just kill jobs. Although both are important, they don't resonate with the suburbs. What the heck is he talking about, suburbs? Yeah, okay. I'm going to give him a little play there. So for some Democrats, a retooled message is the only way to dig themselves out of their deep hole. Here they go, changing a word again. It's not a repackaging now. So now instead of repackaging their message, they're going to call it retooling their message. Nearly a dozen, two dozen members of the New Democrat Coalition, a group of pro-business lawmakers, are expected to carry that plea to their chief. So it's not suburbs, it's pro-business. That's what they're talking about when they said suburbs. Nearly two dozen members of the New Democrat Coalition, a group of pro-business lawmakers, are expected to carry that plea to the retreat after House Minority Whip Danny Hoyer, Democrat from Maryland, pressured them to speak up. Coalition members often skip the caucus meeting and the annual retreat, but they signed up this time. What? You mean Smurf's message shouldn't be so anti-business? But those businesses and corporations don't create jobs. That's what Hillary said, and she's your next torchbearer. And listen, they are only attending because Steny Hoyer pressured them to do so. They don't really want to do it. They don't really want to attend. That's not what the Smurfs really are all about, is it? Or is it that this is exactly what it's all about? And it's exactly what the Smurfs are really, that they're really just like the Elmos, beholden to business. But their part in the whole two-party farce is to pretend that they aren't pro-business, that they aren't beholden to business, that they are on the people's side, that they are populist. Pay no attention to that income inequality behind the curtain that widens at an even faster rate than it did under the Elmos. Pay no attention to the fact that you don't feel the economic recovery that is going on all around you. And by all around, the Smurfs mean, of course, on Wall Street. It's not the message. It is that no one really believes you anymore. It's not your message. It isn't enough to say that you care. That's just lip service. You need to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. This is why Elizabeth Warren and her populist message is giving you fits. Because she is the real deal. She isn't just giving us lip service. She really, really means it. And the Smurfs' response is, no, no. You're just supposed to say it. You're not supposed to mean it. So what do the Smurfs do? Under pressure from the minority whip, they are going to let a little bit of their true selves seep out of Pandora's box. That they really are all about big business. They really do serve not the people who elected them, but special interests, just like the Elmos. Folks, they are one big super party, I'm telling you. At the core, they are all the same. Smurfs, Elmos, all of them. This is why Liz Warren continues to give them fits. This is why Obama would not nominate her to head up the new Consumer Protection Agency, because it would give us too much protection. This is why Tim Geithner hated her, because she is too tough on Wall Street, because she is too tough on big banks. This is why, if you ever listened to one of her TARP reports, you would know this. This is why she sabotaged her own president's nomination of Andy Weiss, because she means what she says. She is, as I have said before, everything that every other Smurf pretends to be in this ruse, this farce, this play that they're putting on of a two-party system. And while the Smurfs have their meeting and try to figure out what kind of retooling their message needs, Liz Warren is building a small army of followers in the very caucus that Queen Pelosi is worried about. Sadly for us, the electorate, the majority of taxpayers, the middle class, Liz Warren won't do anything more than cause a disruption. J. just like the Tea Party, their movement will be infiltrated by the establishment politicians that will water down the populist message and lead it to amount to nothing. Already in Liz's army, there are many who talk the talk but don't walk the walk, like Kristen Gildebrand of New York, who, when she stepped up, stunned the world of Smurfville with her support of pulling for Andy Weiss. But as for Liz, I want to touch on how powerful this person could be and how exactly why she won't be the Smurfs candidate for president and why she is different than any other creature that we see in Washington today. But first, before we get into Liz Warren, let me remind you that when it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and his Choice at Mattress at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. My whole family is now sleeping on beds from Choice Mattress, and you cannot say enough about the benefits of a great night's sleep on the mattress chosen especially for you. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or 15-year, 100% full replacement warranty. And check out all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see them at 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill, or give them a call at 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Let's move on and talk about Liz. And, you know, I'm so sorry, folks. I think I'm going to be rushing here because, as I said at the beginning, there's just not going to be enough time in tonight's show to keep this going. I'm going to try and push the extend button, but I'm not really sure it's going to work. Anyway, the Kristen Gildebrand, Democrat senator from New York, went on NBC's Morning Joe, and everybody knows this now, refused to say if she would back Andy Weiss. And she made it clear who was really calling the shots. She said, and I quote, "I think Senator Warren is very clear. She believes that as a person responsible for how consumers are affected, this background and his experience don't fit the requirements. Weiss's supporters in the White House and on Wall Street were positively stunned. Never mind that as Undersecretary for Domestic Finance, Weiss would not be the person chiefly responsible for consumer financial protection. Warren created a whole separate agency for that. Or that neither Gildebrand nor Warren had ever met or spoken with Andy Weiss." Well, folks, I got to tell you, you don't have to sit in the White House. You don't have to sit. That's funny. You don't have to sit in the outhouse to know that something stinks. "That moment stunned me," said one close friend of Weiss, "for a senator from New York who is ostensibly part of the sensible center to say this. I was just flabbergasted." Now, that is why I think Gildebrand is simply infiltrating the Warren movement. She is a bank Wall Street lover. She is more like Hillary than she is like Liz Warren. And so for her to jump ship like this was indeed stunning and quite curious. But understand how if you're a supporter of banks and a supporter of Wall Street, then you're part of the sensible center. So be prepared for them to start to ostracize Liz Warren. But as the Democrats kept coming out in opposition, while the Republicans sat back and relished the show, just like the Democrats would relish the show when Republicans went at it against each other, especially in the 2012 primaries, it became clear that Weiss would have a hard time getting confirmed. Elizabeth Warren sometimes was disregarded by the White House as largely a relevant nuisance. It could no longer be ignored. Bolstered by grassroots groups eager for any anti-Wall Street crusade and a vibrant progressive media that hung on every word that Warren said. It's not a total victory. Weiss is still in, joined the Treasury as an unconfirmed counselor to Secretary Jack Lew. So you can't get him confirmed the right way. We're going to slip him in the back door as an unconfirmed advisor. The establishment still gets their way. But in terms of symbolism, Washington power game and the ideological direction of the Democrat Party, Warren won big. This is the most important quote right here. "And the moderate Wall Street and business-friendly wing of the party in past years happily occupied by Democratic presidential nominee in waiting Hillary Clinton, got punched in the mouth. And that's an absolute fact, folks. Right there, it's evidence, clear evidence, that there's no difference between these two parties. At their core, they are all the same. Elmos, Smurfs, all of them. Person close to the campaign against Weiss said they will have to be more careful now, and you won't see any bankers nominated for high-level positions. That is just too rich. On the other side, the despair amongst Wall Street Democratic elite is growing acute, as if the belief that Weiss himself never mattered in this fight at all. It wasn't about Weiss. It was about the fact that at their core, they are all the same, folks. Smurfs, Elmos, all of them. A single superpower, a single super party pretending to be two separate diabolically opposed forces. The Tea Party interrupted that in 2010. The establishment, infiltrated the Tea Party and destroyed it. But this time, this movement has a friend on the inside in Liz Warren, and she is gaining more friends on the inside, like Christine Gildebrand. Now, only time will tell if Gildebrand is sincere or if she is indeed the infiltration. But this one will be harder for the Smurfs to live down, because their own opposition to Liz Warren exposes how they are no different than the Elmos, and that all the issues of passion that I listed in my show on Tuesday last week are just to infiltrate a grassroots of Americans and turn the people onto themselves so that our power is effectively cut in half. That's the aim. Take these grassroots movements, infiltrate them, divide them. That's their tactic. It's been that way for a long time. I'm telling you, if someone like Warren came out and said that the only way to fix DC is to vote all of us out, if she actually campaigned against herself, she could actually unite us, unite the electorate in an anti-incumbent movement to end all anti-incumbent movements. Then she really would achieve rock star status, because Capitol Hill doesn't just need new blood, folks. It needs a complete congressional transfusion. But sadly, I'm already seeing chinks in her people's advocate armor. Sad to say, it just simply seems to happen to everyone. It's not necessarily a done deal here, but I was reviewing another story about Warren. She took her populist ire that she usually reserves for Wall Street banks and directed it Thursday at drug companies that are making billion-dollar profits. Now, mind you, folks, that's not illegal, making $1 billion of profits, but I love this woman. She is everything every other Smurf pretends to be. I just wish she would go all out. Why not point out how, right after Obama took office in 2009, he met with Big Pharma, actually crawled into bed with them, along with the big insurance lobby and big providers, health providers lobbies, to get their input on how the new healthcare law could bring them more customers and get them more money, because they're the big winners in the unaffordable I don't give a shit act. If she could just jump on board that both sides are interested in only themselves and the special interests that they serve, rather than the middle class who actually voted them into office, then she could be instrumental in a national effort to send all the bums packing. But every now and then you hear her tout the Smurfs, including Obama, as though they are the champions of the middle class, while thumping the Elmos as being the middle class worst nightmare. And it makes me wonder, is she just part of the ruse? Has her corruption begun? Like the Hubble telescope seeing the very birth of a new star, are we witnessing how a good person with our best interest at heart begins to turn to the dark side? Willing to sacrifice core fundamentals in order to advance and further at least some of their own message? their agenda, however good it may be, her career? I hope not. I have followed Liz Warren for many years, since long before she entered the political arena. When she threw her hat in for senator, I thought, now here is one who could actually do it, who could actually take a pure message of what is best for the middle class, the human community, and the country as a whole, and advance it in a way that doesn't surrender to the game of Washington politics, the cronyism, the corruption. But here she is, sticking it to Big Pharma. So my jury is still out on her. It seems, Warren said, that the biggest drug companies are increasingly playing by a different set of rules than everybody else. Yeah, those are the ACA rules, folks. It was a 20-minute speech that she gave during the Families USA's annual Health Action Conference in Washington, D.C. Warren is the latest in a string of Democrat heavyweights to speak at the annual meeting of Family USA's, one of the strongest supporters of the Affordable Care Act. That's Families USA. Many of the on the left have been pushing Warren to run for president as a more liberal counterpoint to likely 2016 candidate Hillary Clinton. So we see. This is an annual event by Smurfs for Smurfs. So it always headlines with a series of Smurfs. This is one of the strongest supporters of Obamacare, and Obamacare was one of the strongest supporters of Big Pharma. A little hypocrisy, anyone? Suddenly, I'm not so impressed. This is the chink I was talking about in the armor of the people's advocate, Liz Warren. Hillary Clinton had spoken at this event, and she is a crony capitalist if ever there was one, a darling of Wall Street, and Liz has at times taken her to task for that. I am starting to believe more and more that Hillary may try to get Liz to be the Veep on her ticket. Maybe that's what their meetings were all about, understanding that if Hillary chooses Liz, it will only be to use her so that Hillary can cover her stealth connections to Wall Street with the veil of populism. Once in office, if she wins, Hillary would have nothing but contention between her and Liz, unless she could fully turn Liz to the dark side. And with some visible chinks beginning to peer in her armor, that's not out of the realm of possibilities. So sad. But I don't think it'll happen. I don't think that she'll be chosen as the VP, bottom part of the ticket. This was hopefully just an appearance for Liz. I don't think she will take a VP slot, and I don't think it'll be offered either. But then again, sometimes I just don't think. At least that's what some people have told me. Now, Clinton has spoken at the event. Obama has attended twice, once when he was senator in 2007 and then in 2011 after the passage of the Unaffordable We Don't Give a Shit Act. Vice President Joe Biden spoke there, President Bill Clinton, and the late Senator Ted Kennedy. All have spoken at the Families USA Health Action Conference. Warren, who has made financial reform her signature issue, lauded the Affordable Care Act for reducing the country's uninsured and providing millions of people access around the healthcare. So see, she's just on that side. Now, see, and there she goes. I love her taking aim at the law-breaking drug companies, but it was the Unaffordable We Don't Really Care Act that made their actions possible. Otherwise, she wouldn't have to call for additional legislation to stop it. These actions she's calling unlawful are actually legal. Add that to her representation of overall affordability and accessibility, and you have a real serious issue brewing here. And I wish we could talk more about how much it costs us to insure just a handful of more people, but we're just flat running out of time, folks. So with that, I just want to let you know that that's a wrap for tonight's show. My pond will reopen tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Now, there's not going to be a show on Wednesday night because I got something to do, and I don't have the benefit of a fill-in guest host like the big boys do. But I will see you here tomorrow night. Check the website to see what's up for tomorrow's night's show. That's 1111broadcasting.com. That's the numerals, by the way, 1111broadcasting.com. I hope you'll join us, and until then, do what you love, and love what you do. Good night, everybody.